not entirely sure that the content of this program is appropriate for anyone.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for returning to Fusebox. This is the second installment, Cross Currents, which will all become very clear as we go on. But I just got to say, starting out here, that I was rather overwhelmed, maybe, by the remarkably wonderful feedback from the first program that we did here on the Unsug Network. And I have to tell you, let me just say that when we get reactions like that, when we get favorable response, particularly genuinely honest response like that, from people seen and unseen, I might add here, that it's really the right medicine. It certainly is for me, because you see right here, see, this doesn't have any bullets anymore, because I decided halfway through that, maybe I'll do this. That's right. So anyway, honestly, I really want to thank everybody who took the time to sort of chime in there and do the welcome aboard thing. And I don't know any of the folks really, except for Frank only tangentially, on this network, but it does feel a lot like we're picking up the conversation where we left it off. And I am really, really gratified by that. And personally speaking, I promise, I am making a promise right here, right now, that I will keep the wriggling squids of destiny from leaving that closet over there. And right now, Chelsea, would you check that closet, make sure they're still... Are they still there? Go ahead, just...
Stop it!
Oh.
No.
All right.
Oh.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm going to clean up, and I'll be right back. Here's a File 13.
File 13.
Next up on C-SPAN, the first in a series of three senatorial debates between incumbent Senator Bob Fusky and a gigantic praying mantis.
The American dream has always been about bigness and hugeness. More is what we want, and more is what we're going to get. As long as I...
So, yeah, I just want to reiterate that all of the comments that I received have been the right medicine for sure. And also, I really think we're going to have fun on these subsequent shows. I've already started seeding the garden with those particular ideas. And I'm surprised I still have friends. So that's good. And also, I just want to say a couple of things have happened as I've been listening to other programs on this network here. Of them, one by PQ River called the Quake Reversal Satellite, which I've been listening to for a long time anyway, but I really enjoy it. He dropped a little bomb the other day, and I was amazed that somehow he was referencing this particular subject, because he'd already talked about it, and I had completely missed it somewhere. I don't know where or how, but so it comes about that his collaborator in crime there, Jimbo, who is an avid Vic and Sade fan and curator, if you have never been to his site to witness that, you should.
VicandSade.blogspot.com.
Well, anyway, it comes to my attention through this rather random comment that there are unproduced scripts of this show, and somehow there might be a invitation to kind of maybe create some of those. And, of course, that got all these gears spinning. Here they are right now. Yeah, captivated by this idea, because I really think, certainly within the voice community that I'm part of, there are numerous folks in here who would just put themselves down in front of a moving train, you know, to get access to something like that. One of the folks I work with, who will be a guest on this show, I promise, has a group out here called the Willamette Radio Workshop. His name is Sam A. Mowry, and Sam's a very big voice, huge Orson Wellesian type of voice, amazing. But anyway, he has so many very talented people in his talent pool. Many of those who have, and you'll hear them as time goes on, have done stuff for us. And also big fans of recreating classic radio, and has a reputation for, I think I mentioned this before, he's done, what kind of got them on the map was a very accurate recreation of War of the Worlds, which they've been doing tirelessly, it seems, just about every year, because somebody wants it and, you know, they put it up. And we've had a lot of fun adding new elements to that. But anyway, he's got a cast of folks that I'm sure would be delighted to take part. And if I may be so bold as to suggest, just I'm thinking out loud here, if I was casting this, and if I had anything to say about that, I probably would not cast people who sound alike. That's when you get into that world, you kind of paint yourself in a corner, because there may be somebody who sounds like a character, but they couldn't act their way out of a paper bag. And in this particular show, folks, I have to stress that the acting chops are really phenomenally huge, a big requirement. So we need to find folks who can really do that and get the characterization accurately. So I'm going to be looking for people that basically get the intention of these characters and the cadence. That's really important, so that could cut, you know, kind of happen, and we don't feel that we're creating all new people, which I don't think would be, that wouldn't be my desire. I think this thing has really established itself as a very specific form, and we just need to kind of take the ride with it. And I think it would be hilariously wonderful. So I'm putting that on the burner, and I'm going to chat with people, and well, if you don't hear from me, that's because I've been abducted. But I think we'll find some cooperation there without question. And also, another little thank you to PQ for turning me on to something which I had not heard of. It's called the Digital Comic Museum. Well, I spent several hours in the wee morning going through there, because I've come across this site called, I don't think it's, is it Comic Vines or something like that, which publishes all these covers of magazines from as far back as you can imagine to relatively current. It's a great searching resource if you're curious about what the cover of a particular thing looked like, but that's about the extent of it. I mean, you couldn't get into the magazine or any of that, but this is pretty amazing. You can download these things and read them and oogle and ah and all that kind of stuff. And
oogling, you were oogling?
Yes, I was. I was oogling and eyeing. Is that okay?
Just take the meds. Everybody else does.
You know, thinking about the immediacy of response got me thinking a little while ago about what the days were like back in the Jurassic days of early radio syndication, of which I was a part, at least for our show. There's no analogy to that, for that, these days. By that, I mean how soon it took for someone to respond to something you did. We're conditioned now to kind of expect it almost, that there will be some reaction, or crickets, if that's worthy of it too. That can happen. It's happening right now, thank you. The thing it brought to mind for me was back in the days when we were doing Dry Smoke, you know, back in the public radio days. Well, it just seemed like there was nobody out there, you know, and we were operating in a vacuum. And even back in those days where, you know, an episode would have several hundred, edits and that kind of stuff for a half-hour show, which consumed a great deal of time. I don't care what kind of show you're doing. It consumes time. That thing, because we were wrestling with tape and multi-tracks and all that kind of stuff back in the day, very, very cumbersome. And the weight of that responsibility would get heavier and heavier, probably equal to the lack of response that you'd be getting on a weekly basis from whatever it is. And it didn't mean that people didn't enjoy it, because if you ever did come in contact with somebody, they go, it's amazing, oh my God, it's love. Well, where are you? You know, and you can't make people do that. I mean, when you reach a certain celebrity status, it happens anyway, but we weren't there. So it's kind of a lonely place. And I remember fondly, not at the time, but now, that I had hit the wall pretty much. I'd gotten to that point where I was questioning whether or not I should do this, because I was starting to get into a little more of the commercial work and you know, producing for people and doing that stuff, which was about as far from creative as you can get, at least the kind of creative I liked. And that, you know, became a money thing, because you're making money now, and oh God, you know, there's that, and well, you do have to keep the lights going and all that. So those sorts of logistics were getting very heavy, and then just the lack of response out there. Yeah, I took that bus into an Ingmar Bergman movie. You know what I'm saying?
Kind of like this. Ich vermiete dir hier der Hartheit.
Stern forest die Sternheit. Yeah, but yeah, like that. I reached a point where I was just about ready to redirect, you know. And so I trot out to the mailbox that day. And I see an envelope in there, and it's from National Public Radio. Now, we didn't have anything to do with National Public Radio, to be honest with you. We did public radio, but we syndicated our own show, so we weren't affiliated with them. However, one of our shows somehow ended up in the clutches of one of these programs like, you know, Voices in the Wind or whatever that whatever was called back in the day.
Dream of the Butterfly.
Yes, exactly. Back in those days, people would distribute things because these tapes were bicycled, so to speak, to various radio stations across the country. And you never knew what happened to them. I mean, we didn't get them back. So, you know, they were in the archive of the station. So someone may have passed it along to somebody, who knows. But whatever it was, here's this letter from NPR. And it's got a handwritten address to me. It's not typed. It's like, that's interesting. So I take it inside and I quickly open it up, and the stationery on the inside of the envelope has the logo of a program called The New Show. Now, if any of you are old enough to remember this, there was a program on NPR in the early 80s that was hosted by a guy named David Ossman. David Ossman is and was a founding member of one of my favorite troupes of all time, the Firesign Theater. And if you are not familiar with their work, I urge you to go find it somewhere, hopefully in a way that profits them. But if not, go find it, because it is the reason, at least, that I'm sitting here, and it is the reason why many of us have pursued this particular road. So I open this up, and it says, in rough terms, it was, you know, hey, hang in there, blah, 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 hang in there, that kind of thing. That's what I took away from it anyway, hang in there. And it's a good thing, because that couldn't have been better medicine either. That was amazing. Somebody who had actually taken the time to do that. I had the grand fortune to go to a convention. We had won an honorable mention at the, what was that called now? Convergence Convention, I think. It goes hand in hand with the Mark Time Awards that David Ossman and I think Peter Proctor at that time had engineered. And we won like I said, an honorable mention. And we decided to go out because what the hell? It's Proctor and Ossman. That would be amazing. So I got there a day early, and I was able to hang out in the bar with David Ossman for several quality hours. which was really fun because he lives in Seattle. It's just off the coast of Seattle there. He invited us up to see a, what was that? It was Waiting for the Electrician or someone like him. They reenacted that album, but it wasn't with the entire Firesign cast. It was David, his wife, his son, playing the part now that I think Bergman played, or parts that Bergman played, and a cast of other folks who just lived up there. And it was quite amazing and quite fun to see. But that's what I'm kind of saying, is that we're never sure where these things are going to come from in terms of people reaching out and saying, wow, we really enjoyed that. You know, and it's I keep harping on it because it's a message to me too, because I really want to do that with programs that strike me that way. And I just think it's valuable to the producer, it's valuable to anyone who's doing it, and, you know, not disingenuous, but you know what I mean. It's the real heartfelt stuff. So it is good medicine for all of us involved. And I'll be back after this important word.
It's the Futures Investment Hour with Kenny Williams.
Welcome to Futures Investment Hour. On the line with us from Merritt, Wisconsin, Josh Frieder of Merrill Goldman Futures. Josh, a lot of exciting opportunities out there, as I understand it.
Yes, Kenny, there are incredible opportunities in wheat, lumber, squid heads, and rhinestones. You name it, if you have $1,000, $2,500, $5,000 or more, and you invested 10 months ago or right now, you could have earned a 10, 20, even 100 to 1,000% return on your investment.
So what can our listeners do to take advantage of these incredible futures opportunities?
Pick up the phone, dial 1-800-252-3356, and talk to one of our qualified investment counselors. That's 1-800-252-3356.
1-800-252-3356. Now, can you get a little more specific, Josh? Where are the best opportunities right now, today?
Well, there was a massive earthquake in Kyrgyzstan this week that killed well over 50,000 people. Sucks for them. Great for us, because that means lumber, asphalt, rebar, rhinestones, huge demand. If you've got $1,000, $2,500, $5,000 or more to invest, you could earn $20, $500, even $5,000 a day, not including compound interest, plus an additional $10,000 to $100,000 roll around per hour.
Wow. I've done a little math here on my end, and I'm seeing the potential for millions of dollars profit. Is that right, Josh?
Kenny, could be millions, could be billions. For example, a horrific volcanic eruption last week virtually destroyed the entire island of Mangatan, killing everyone, with the exception of a few wealthy tourists that were able to charter helicopters. Bad news if you're a Mangatanian. Incredible news if you've got $1,000, $2,500, $5,000 or more to invest, because you could earn up to $100 million in the next 10 weeks. That's a 1,000,000,000% increase. And that's 1-800-252-3356. And talk to one of our qualified investment counselors.
Well, I can't imagine why anyone wouldn't pick up the phone and call 1-800-252-3356. Can you, Josh?
Kenny, not when there was a nuclear accident in Kava-Sankava that irradiated thousands of square hectares of agricultural land, leading to a famine that will, some say tragically, kill millions. But if you have $1,000, $2,500, $5,000 or more to invest, you could make a dollar or more per dead Kava-Sankavian.
1-800-252-3356.
Kenny, or a typhoon that killed 20,000 in Bhutan could earn our listeners thousands of dollars a second.
252-3356. Call now.
Or how about this opportunity? Half the population of Imago committed suicide last week in a gruesome bloodletting that could net our listeners trillions.
We'll be right back.
Well, we were talking about NPR. Something dawned on me that I think maybe I'm not the only one who's perceived this, but NPR has changed. See, back when I was growing up, back again in that Jurassic time I was telling you about, well, back in that time, we had this.
Alternative radio.
That's right. Alternative radio. That's what they actually called it. Actually, people like Firesign Theater and Frank Zappa and, you know, fill in the blank, Disaster Corporation. People were actually getting airplay in the middle of the day, not at Monday morning at 2 a.m. No, they were really in rotation. You would hear a lot of that stuff, even earlier than that, as well as you know, progressive music of the time. So they were really quite different. Because right now, as we look at the NPR type of thing, you will be hard-pressed to find any audio drama. You'll find Prairie Home Companion, which, as I was saying the other day, they can't really afford to get rid of because it occupies a space in NPR time-space continuum that if they actually removed it, it might be sucked up its own sphincter. I don't know. I'm just thinking that that's possible. There are great shows on there, very well produced and really interesting stuff. Radiolab is one of my favorites, or whatever it's called. Really like their attitude. And so there is stuff being done, but where did it all go? Because it's not like it's not being done, which is one of the great things about this medium today, is that more and more people are getting involved in this and are producing what we would then have called radio drama. It's sometimes called audio drama now. It's being done. People are doing it, whether they're doing reenactments of older stories or their own stuff or whatever. It's back. And I think that's great. It speaks to both the desire of those folks who remember it, but also to the audience that's apparently now keen to listen again. That was our big deal, is that getting people to listen to the radio, even in the 80s, was really hard. And by the way, that was the Reagan era. Yeah. So really hard. And even more hard to get grants. We were lucky to get one from the National Endowment, and I don't know how that happened. I have absolutely no clue whatsoever. I'm delighted, but wow. Really? Wow. I don't know when the last time is they funded anything in this world. I don't think it's happened. And luckily, there are other ways to do that these days. We don't need organizations like that as much. We were sort of striking out alone there for a while. The individual radio station might put up a one-off or something. And then there was Tom Lopez and ZBS Media, who was doing stuff pretty consistently and really cool stuff. And there was, of course, the commercial end of it, which to some extent, at least in those days, was still sort of out there. The CBS Mystery Theater went for quite a while. That's a commercial deal. Jim French, who I think is still producing in Seattle, was doing stuff. And so there was a little bit of that component, but they were more and more and more being relegated to the sort of, you know, oldie station, and then eventually only bats could hear the signal, you know, that kind of thing. So they'd be quietly sort of, being quietly put out. So it got kind of quiet. So now we see sort of a renaissance of stuff and all kinds of different things, which is why I think I'm so excited about this again, is that it is all kinds of stuff. And I find that stuff really captivating. I don't care if it's somebody going to the grocery store to buy a carton of milk. It's the fact that you're taking that trip with that person to do that. And you get to experience all of that stuff that's happening there. And that's, for me, that's just really compelling for two reasons. I just really enjoy being kind of the audio voyeur and something like that. But the other thing is, as it applies to my actual work, I'm listening to that background for randomness. What is it that makes up a truly random background? Frank Nora on the Overnightscape has hundreds and hundreds and thousands of hours of Manhattan background. And once you start experiencing that from that world, it's like it really does tend to inform how you, or at least, you know, in my world, how I would construct that as work. So it's fascinating. I'm never going to get tired of that. And I know it's also a penchant from time to time to talk about the interesting realities of this existence. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to go right there with you. Well, take this guy right here.
Huh?
Yeah, that's right. You.
What?
Come here.
No.
Yeah, I know, but come here.
What do you want?
I have nothing to say to the press at this time. You'll have to clear that with my...
he purports...
He
purports to be a congressman.
I am a very well-respected pillar of my community, and
I'm sure you are. But I'm going to show you something right now. Well, You can't see it, but you'll be able to get the idea. If you unhinge them right here, like this.
What are you doing? Get your hand. Stop.
Just simple pop. Ah, there you go. See? Now, you see what's in there? That's an insect. That's actually not a human being. That's actually an insect. Now, here's the thing. When you expose them like this, you know, kind of get them free to the air, what happens is in a few seconds that's what happens. So what I'm saying is...
What you're saying is he's an insect.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that there are times in our reality where you really wonder, what the hell's going on? I don't know how many have seen David Cronenberg's testimony to video games called Existence, but if you have not and you like David Cronenberg, or even if you don't, and you just like video games, go take a look at this. There's a segment in there, and I don't know if this has happened to you. I'm assuming this probably has happened to a lot of people, where you're going somewhere. I mean, you're in some retail establishment or hell, maybe you're just talking to somebody. And you ask a question or make a statement or something, and the person does not respond necessarily. It's almost as if they didn't hear you. In Existence, there's this segment where the two characters come up to this gentleman, and they ask him a question, and he does a video lock. He just sort of loops. He's stuttering, if you will. He's not saying anything, but his image is sort of fluttering back and forth as he's standing there. And one of the characters remarks that, he's waiting for the right question. He's not going to respond until you give him the right. And then once you give him the right question, then he comes up to speed and everything's cool. I think sometimes, it's been purported that maybe not everybody here is totally real. I don't know. But if that is the case, then some of them may be
non-role-playing game characters. This could happen.
And I don't know. You have to ask them the right question. It's that little piece of reality that starts getting peeled away. And you got to ask that question. Is this real or...
Is it Memorex?
Yeah, or that, which four people will remember, I'm sure. Thanks. In a strange tangential way, brings up this other topic that I was thinking about. You know, it's this rather sad, tragic thing that happened in France at, Charlie Hebdo or whatever it's called, that magazine. I don't know. Have any of you seen the actual illustrations that were posted that resulted in this horrible thing? Well, somebody sent them to me. If you look at them, they're actually quite funny. I'm sorry. They actually are quite funny. And
Lake of Fire, dude.
Ooh. I don't mean to trounce on anybody's, religious or spiritual thing. That's not my job. But I will say that I think what's happening lately, and this does tangentially link to this whole NPR thing, trust me. I think we're going a wee bit over cautious about everything. Our lives are becoming an endless eggshell walk. And I think we can't do that. And I know there's a median ground here. There's where you don't want to be disrespectful. It's not about that. It's just that things are becoming a little bit too serious. My rationale for this, too, was the shape of a lot of programming, television programming, which seems to be one of two camps. It's either extremely trendy, or it's kind of edgy and sort of not politically correct for the very same reason. And it just doesn't seem like there's a happy medium there. And I'd be interested to know where this is going to shake out. I think we all just need to relax. Because what'll happen is if everybody takes the joke, if everybody's cool with it, it's a happier place. You're not insulting somebody. I really don't think that the energy in a lot of these satires is vindictive. Sometimes it is, but not the majority of the time. It's what we do. Satire is a commentary on our environment as we see it right now. So I think it's actually a healthy expression. It also gets you closer to the eternal smile that's really all is, right? So I think stuff like that is kind of influencing our culture right now in a way that's making it very strange. And that's why we're having to find other outlets for certain kinds of expression, which really may be evaporating. And that's a troublesome thing. I mean, you think about some of the comedy that was done in the 60s and 70s, some of the more aggressive comedy I'm thinking of, couldn't do it now. Couldn't do it. Well, I mean, even non-aggressive comedy like Amos and Andy, regardless who the actors were, what their ethnicity was, the fact of the matter is you couldn't do it. It would not be possible, irrespective of whether it's funny or not. Doesn't matter. That's verboten. Cannot go there. And, you know, in some cases, I get it. But in other cases, it's like, it's kind of sad because these are interesting characters. You know, it's fun. It's fun radio. Even cartoons have taken this on the chin. You know, I mean, you remember that time that wasn't too long ago where I think it was Tom and Jerry was like on the carpet for being ultra violent. No, not really. It's a cartoon, folks. Please. You know, I mean, I get it, but still, have a pill. Interesting sort of filtering that's happening. And that's kind of what I was saying about NPR is that it seems to be getting more and more vapid. There's just this homogenization that's happening in radio, predominantly on the loftier sides of things. And it's okay then, because what's happening is what's happening right here. That's why. Because what's happening right here is going to change and is changing and is part of the change of all of this future media. This whole one hose where everything comes from thing. Now, those guys have enjoyed that for far too long, and now it's time to kind of turn it around and maybe put the choice back in the hands of the viewer, which won't make a lot of folks happy because, you know, there are things connected to that, like advertising and all that. And, well, we get it, but, you know, it's a new day.
File 13.
Sadly, Tim the postman was mistaken for a chew toy by a local rabid dog.
Oh, nice doggy. Hey, little doggy. How are you?
So suffice to say that I'm delighted with subscription media. I don't care what it is. I think that's great. I think it will afford the producer and the filmmaker and the writer and all that an amazing place to play. And the audience will get really interesting work. We'll get some stupid stuff too, but, you know, I think the playing field being that large, it's going to get really nichey very fast. And so they're going to target their audience pretty quick. And, you know, I think this is a very good sign. So in terms of media, you know, as that is concerned, two of the projects that I want to get out, one of them I started back in 2008. It's a musical project, but it involves a lot of spoken word and little bits and stuff. And it's a fun thing. Like I say, it started back in 2008 and it's taken, you know, 6 years. it's not that it was that intense really. It's just that life intervenes and you know how it goes. So you get pulled away from it. So anyway, I got it done. Right now it's awaiting mastering. And as soon as that's done, then we're trying to figure out a way to do this. And we've been talking about all sorts of different packaging because back in the 70s when we were first approaching not radio actually we were and we I'm talking about Gerald McQuinn, who's a writing partner of mine, we were approaching publishers to do a series of books that we thought would be really cool, and had a nibble or two that never really panned out because we were pitching that at a time where that kind of book wasn't really in style. And it wouldn't be until 2 years later that it would be in style. Yeah, we were just a little ahead of that notion. But even then, the idea that a book wasn't going to be enough. It's not enough to convey this particular thing we were talking about. And we wanted to work in some other form of media, but everything we thought of was either out of our range or untenable. And it just doesn't seem, it didn't seem at the time to be a viable pathway. And now we're in a very unique place. The innovation of this sort of ebook thing, which brings together multiple parts of multimedia together to tell a story, is really interesting to me because I have a funny feeling that that could be a great vehicle for many of these concepts we're talking about. Because even with this musical thing I'm finishing up here, yeah, I was never seeing this as a CD. First of all, it was created at a bit rate that's outside the realm of human kin. So it wasn't going to go that way. So it was like, well, how else can I bring in this visual element that is kind of critical to it? I guess what I'm trying to say is we're trying to hybridize this particular thing. So it's a collection of different medias that create this one overall thing. And that could be a really interesting way to go. And it looks as though that is possible. Looks like it can happen. And so we need to work that out. But, you know, I'm wondering, too, out there of the folks who are listening, in terms of tangible media, I'd love to know what your thoughts are in terms of how many folks are really still connected to hard media like CDs and DVDs and stuff like that. The DVD I almost understand still because there are extras. There are things connected to this disc that you can't get in a streaming content. Not yet. I don't know if they've worked it out or they're trying to or they have to go to Mars to find it. I don't know. But whatever it is, we don't have it today. The CD thing, in my estimation, is done. It's just, it's not only is it an inferior audio delivery system, it's just bulky and problematic. And most of us, if we're still buying the occasional CD, what's the first thing that happens? You take that little thing out and you rip it to something, and then maybe you stick it in a binder or maybe you just whatever, right? So it's not like it has great intrinsic value like, well, albums used to with all the art and the big stuff you could actually see. But, you know, it just doesn't have that kind of packaging thing anymore. And I was talking to somebody who's in this business of DVD and CD replication, and they said, here's the thing. The only thing keeping us alive right now is the specialty packaging, because nobody is buying the onesie-twosie thing anymore. They're buying box sets and fancy packaging and all that. That's selling, and that's keeping it almost alive enough to justify the rest. It's going to fail. The CD stuff is doomed. We know that. Even bands these days have found a different way to go about that. I mean, I know there's a quotient out there that is sort of re-embracing the vinyl thing, which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I hated vinyl even when I was 5. Couldn't stand it. But anyway, there is that, and it has its charm for many, and that's fine. But I think the CD thing is kind of over, and we're all kind of seeking content in other ways. And so I think we're there. We're at this crossroads where something new could possibly happen or disparate parts that are already out there could be used in different ways. And I think that's it. I don't know, but I think it is. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And by the way, for thoughts on that or anything else, please feel free to email me at Mark, and that's with a C, as he was Milton over there was so happy
to. You didn't mention the spelling. Somebody's got to look out for you.
Well, okay, but I'm in the moment, right?
What are you, freaking Lawrence Olivier?
Idiot. Anyway. So it's Mark at fuseaudiodesign.com. Fuse, F-U-S-E, just like the fuse. Audiodesign.com. And I'd be thrilled to hear from you. So, feel free to reach out. I would love to hear your comments on it. Where else are we? Yeah, I have a couple of other things here before we say adieu. The next show, I do believe, the next show is going to be called Twisted Epiphanies, and it's based on a title of a series that we've been producing now for how long?
2 years.
Thank you. That features writers. Short, very short spoken word pieces, like a minute or two at the max. Some might call it poetry, but it's not that world, so don't think that. But what they are is spoken word pieces that are audio enhanced for your enjoyment. And this is another one of those concepts that we're trying to kind of mutate into this new delivery system, whatever that's going to be, which would involve images and spoken word and stuff. So we'll probably feature one or two of those little things next time. And as well as the musical thing, I think I will feature a little bit of next week as well. But I will tease you with this strangeness.
Hey, hold up. You hear that?
Huh? What?
It's kind of a funny whirring noise. It's coming from over there.
What the hell? It's coming from underneath the ground. You grab that shovel over there, will you?
You sure you wanna...
I don't know. Might be some kind of... spy satellite or something. Look at that. It's making the ground kind of ripple. You see that?
Whoa.
Hey, watch out. It's moving.
That piece is called Discovery. And it's on an album by a gentleman, a nom de plume, by the name of Kryle Gaust. Kryle Gaust was a character we created for Dry Smoke and Whispers, who was allegedly the Angelo Bondolamonti of Dry Smoke. Angelo Bondolamonti is the guy who wrote all the music for Twin Peaks, among other things. He's quite the composer. But anyway, so we crafted this guy to kind of be an interdimensional version of him. But anyway, this album is going to have a bunch of weird things like that. Also, some very seriously musical things, as was once said, and just some fun. So we'll spot through some of those and whet your appetite for that and see if you enjoy it. And the last thing I want to throw out is that while I was listening to the Overnightscape Central the other night, it just occurred to me that one of the great ways that kind of used to be done in the early podcast things was a little cross-pollination among programmers. And I certainly am totally keen and up and available and wanting to do that. Whether it's sharing little bits on other shows or having you share stuff here, whatever. You know, my idea about this was the same as Zap Comics used to do back in the day, where they had the jam, the show jam, if you will, where you basically have a bunch of folks just contributing to, in this case, they were artists and they were all contributing to either a panel or several panels, or one artist would start something and the other artist would finish it, whatever it is. I'm not proposing that for this. I'm just saying that it would be fun to have a little cross-show pollination. And I think it exposes people to a wider range of folks by doing this. So it's just something to think about. And again, I don't want to reinvent the wheel here. This is not Overnightscape Central. This is just a kind of a little different jammy thing that we could do, and it might be fun. So if you have an interest in that, again, let me know, and we will see. So this was a wee longer than last time, and I suspect they will get longer and longer as we as we progress through this.
Yeah, man, you're the John Holmes podcast.
Oh, shut up. Again, thank you so much for tuning in here and being part of this, and I look forward to chatting again on the next episode, which will be called... Twisted Epiphanies. So until our next cartoon, do take care.